Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year. I cannot believe it's 2019, but the calendar has a way of turning every day, and it is officially 2019, the 1st of January. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We have a special New Year's Day show ahead in which we're going to invite a number of our regular guests into the program to look forward to 2019 and some different ideas we can think about and anticipate, topics, top-of-the-mind ideas, all of that. And we're going to get started first with one of my favorites. It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. Adam and I had a chance to have a conversation and tape an interview that's looking forward to some of the top movies we can anticipate for 2019. So again, Happy New Year, everyone. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings as part of our special New Year's Day show, in which we thought it'd be fun to start our opening segment for this New Year's Day by having Adam Holtz joins us, who's a regular contributor on Friday mornings. You know, if you listen on Faith Radio Mornings, joins us and talks about so many of the different movies and video games, music segments, TV shows, all of that, writes the reviews as part of his team for PluggedIn.com, our go-to site for us here on Faith Radio Mornings, and thought it'd be fun to have Adam join us and think about the movies that we can anticipate being released in 2019 as we look ahead. So good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Peter. Glad to be on with you.
Yeah, so fun to do this. I think before we get into some of the movies that we can anticipate as slam dunks in 2019, just if you can think back, what were maybe the two or three favorite movies or slam dunk movies of 2018 that had come out that you really enjoyed?
Well, from a family-friendly perspective, man, I loved Paddington 2, and you wouldn't think that a movie that has a CGI bear would be, you know, one of the best movies of 2018, but for me it was, and it was actually one of only a couple of films that ended up at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes for 2018. So they actually had it listed as their number one movie of the year, so I certainly wasn't alone in my just affection for a lovely, lovely film. And, you know, you and I talk a lot. I don't often get to say that. And I think another one that curiously starred another CGI bear was Christopher Robin, which was giving us a little bit different glance at the Winnie the Pooh story from a little bit more contemporized perspective, perhaps, but the latest in Disney's attempts to take beloved animated franchises and translate them into a live-action format.
Yeah, I remember when we reviewed that one. I haven't seen Paddington, so I'm going to have to go look back at that. But when you and I talked about Christopher Robin, you had just seen it, and the Ewan McGregor character kind of coming back to life about what matters in life. And so many of us that might be working fathers that have sort of maybe been absent from the home and the things that matter. Boy, I know you talked about shedding some tears in the theater. I know I did, too. Yeah. It had a really big impact on my life.
No, it did, and I think you know, so many movies are fantastical or ridiculous or don't do anything except provide a diversion from reality. But Christopher Robin really spoke to some deep themes about fatherhood, as you mentioned, and just how easy it is for us as dads to quietly and maybe gradually get wrapped up in the idea and perhaps the lie that our work is the most important thing, when in fact it's our families. It's our relationships with those that we live with. Day in and day out, you know, I've heard the old cliche, nobody ever laid on their deathbed and thought, man, I just wish I'd worked more, right? But a lot of us, if we make poor choices, may wish that we had really invested in our family and our children or our spouses more. And it certainly was a movie that reminded me of those themes.
Yeah, and I think, and it was a 2017 movie, but I think back to the impact The Greatest Showman has had on our family, and even that final song, you know, From Now On, when he is again kind of coming back to what really matters in life. That boy, when I start losing focus, that's even just a go-to song for me to remember.
No,
you know,
it is.
Really, this is about family and being a father and these kinds of things.
Plus, it's great at a stoplight to pull up next to somebody and just be blasting that and have them look at you like, what is your deal? And you just smile and drive on.
Well, certainly if I could learn a dance step or two, it'd probably be more effective when I play it in the house. But I've never met a dance step that I liked. So it was a great movie.
Well, however, nice job.
And, you know, it's certainly in 2017 and in this last year, I didn't anticipate these movies coming out. I didn't look for them. I didn't even maybe know they were coming out. But they really did make an impact in terms of views of the world. And as we think ahead, Adam, to 2019, and I don't know what all movies you have on your list that you know are coming out, but when you think ahead like this, are there some movies that you think, boy, that's just going to be a slam dunk for me to go see?
Well, I, you know, as I looked at the list, I was kind of overwhelmed at how many slam dunk possibilities there are here. And we get things kicked off with the Lego Movie 2, the second part. What a great title, right?
Right.
In February. And, you know, before I say too much more, that was another one that the first one really had a fatherhood message too. And so there's kind of a consistent theme here. But as I look at the list, virtually everything that I'm looking forward to next year is a reboot or a sequel or a reimagining. We talked about Disney and Christopher Robin being one of the latest reboots, and obviously Mary Poppins is going to be in theaters next week. But next year we can look forward to Dumbo, The Lion King, and Aladdin, all live-action versions. Well, Lion King will just be more realistic CGI. Obviously, it's all animal characters. But, you know, three really beloved films from different eras of Disney's history. And, you know, I think Disney's done a really great job of the ones that we've seen so far, from Cinderella to Pete's Dragon to even Maleficent was a really interesting and engaging take on a character we thought we knew, and it takes it in a different direction. So those would be on the top of my list, the things that Disney is doing with those films.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Disney seems to have a bit of a renaissance with some of these films. It seemed like there was a bit of a dry spell post-Lion King, maybe, in terms of some of these really important cultural movies. And then it sort of reemerged with Frozen, and Moana did quite well. And now we're seeing the live-action Beauty and the Beast. And, boy, that's a pretty heavy slate of live-action movies coming out. Does Disney risk maybe oversaturating the market a bit? Or do you sense that there's just so much love for some of these stories that it's just going to be one great thing after another?
Well, they seem to have a knack for spacing it out. And if we sort of pull back a couple notches of our camera view, Disney has the challenge of trying to space out not only those, but their other two huge franchises are the Marvel superhero movies and Star Wars. And so we get several more of those next year, too. Sandwiched in between the animated stuff, we have Captain Marvel, we have Avengers, we have another Spider-Man movie, which would seem to indicate that, you know, Spider-Man will be back, and then Star Wars Episode 9 right before Christmas next year. And so, and Frozen 2. I mean, holy cow. Between Avengers, Lion King, Toy Story, Frozen 2, and Star Wars, you look at the calendar next year and think, man, other studio heads have to just be saying, what do we got to do to get in front of this train, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible, the releases and just sort of their picking up of different studios and different franchises. There really is a monopoly that's being created that I think for them helps build out their theme parks a little bit too. I know Disney is anticipating the opening of Star Wars World down in Hollywood Studios. And boy, it really does all feed into itself, doesn't it?
No, it does. And, you know, I think it speaks to the power of familiarity. And you and I have talked about the power of nostalgia. And Hollywood is driven by the bottom line, and so anything that has built-in marketing appeal, you know, has sort of a built-in edge over new intellectual property, as it's known. You know, and so in addition to that, you know, we've got a new huge Godzilla movie coming out. We have a remake of the remake of The Grudge. We have It Chapter 2, which was a book that came out in the 80s. We have Downton Abbey, the movie, which is building on, obviously the popular PBS TV series. We have The Addams Family, Charlie's Angels, another Terminator movie, another Jumanji movie. And then there's this quiet sleeper, Masters of the Universe. So everybody who's been longing for a He-Man movie, boy, it's going to be a good year for you.
Oh, man, to see Skeletor brought to life as the antagonist to He-Man, that was one of my childhood dreams, to be He-Man against Skeletor in those moments.
Right?
Absolutely. Chatting with Adam Holtz this morning from go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to say we're chatting this morning with you about some of the movies we can anticipate coming out. Adam, we should take a short break right now, but I would love to mine into some of these movies a little bit more. Nostalgia, the role of original content movies, if there really is such a thing anymore. And I want to ask you specifically, as Disney does some of these remakes, there is some reimagination of these stories, and I think about the LeFou character in Beauty and the Beast. There obviously was a gay twist relative to that, and what we can anticipate with that. So more to come with Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com as we look ahead on this New Year's Day to 2019 in movies. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on this New Year's Day, in which we're joined by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com, who is a regular guest on Friday mornings throughout the year. We talk music and video games, TV shows, and movies with Adam each week. Does such a great job with his team reviewing all of those different popular culture mediums at, again, PluggedIn.com. And Adam, before the break, you referenced quite a few of the Disney movies that are coming out and the franchises that they have, including some live-action remakes of some past hits, like The Lion King. And think about when The Lion King was made, it was at a different time in our country and our culture, Adam. And we saw some of this with Beauty and the Beast, too, where there was some changing in the characters of somebody like a LeFou, who was shown just briefly in a dancing scene with another man, obviously referencing him as a gay character, something they would have never done in Beauty and the Beast in the original cartoon version. What is it like for filmmakers like Disney to have to try to walk this line in the culture where they don't want to maybe antagonize either side of people who might be pro-gay marriage versus anti? And just how do they do this with some of the character development?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I think that we've gotten to a tipping point in our culture where the risk of not going there may have eclipsed the risk of actually going there. One of the ongoing conversations we have here at Plugged In is what we do with movies and TV shows that have a gay character but are mostly positive, because increasingly it's the rare show that doesn't have a same-sex relationship. We recently reviewed the TV show Doc McStuffins.
Yeah.
And there's a same-sex couple on that show.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's creeping into kids' shows. It's in She-Ra and the Princesses of Power and, you know, just all of this stuff. And so I think that we're going to continue to see incremental inclusion of that theme, and I expect Disney to continue to press forward in that. I don't know, you know, where it would show up in a movie like The Lion King, but there has been a huge online push to have Elsa be gay in the next Frozen movie. Now, I don't know or think that's going to happen, but Disney has actually had to deal with pressure from, advocates on that side of this issue who want them to be more explicit in their inclusion of that. And so I think the upshot for us as parents is that this is an issue that we're going to continue to have to wrestle with. And it's not if, but when and how we deal with it, because it's just showing up everywhere. Certainly I think that one valid approach is to say, well, if that's in there, we're not going to engage with it. But I think we're also moving toward a time when it's in everything and you're going to be avoiding everything. And I think at some point we have to take a proactive stance and really address this with our kids and talk through it. Because my guess is it will show up in some of these Disney movies next year. And if not then, not too much further down the road.
Yeah, certainly, Adam, and I've taught a course on sexuality these last 7-8 years at a local university at Northwestern here, and one of the consistent themes I hear from the kids coming to school is that the church and maybe even the family, they didn't talk much at all about issues of sexuality, maybe around dating week on February 14th or something along those lines, and so it really does get left to cultural representations like movies and Disney to define the conversation. And if there's not a voice in response to that, if it's just about avoidance, we kind of go to the common denominator that we see in our culture.
No, that's exactly right. And the culture's voice, because it's everywhere and it's constant, you know, culture is, it kind of acts like an ether that just, it's around us. It washes over us. You know, I think, you know, the day my son came home and sang Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, Robin Laid an Egg. Well, I sang that with my friends 40 years ago. It hasn't been in a movie or a song or anything in culture, but it's still alive out there in the popular oral history of our country. And that's a ridiculous example, but there are more problematic ones that are floating around as well. And so I think it really behooves us as parents to be able to talk about a theology of sexuality. And that might sound really intimidating, but just talking about, you know, what is God's purpose and intent for this element of our lives? Why is it important? Why do we need to think critically about it? Because the culture is certainly delivering messages on it, you know, all the way down to Doc McStuffins, for heaven's sake, you know?
Yeah.
So we have to be engaged on this issue.
Well, and certainly, and our family loves to go to Disney World and loves the magic of that place. And I don't know what it means if they go these sorts of directions of these characters, but certainly it's difficult to think about continuing to take our kids and then in the future grandkids without having these conversations. I don't want to have them avert their eyes during a parade, for example, because we're just afraid
right.
of exposing them to something that they've never thought about.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that there is a season for really sheltering and for avoiding. But I think, especially as they move into their early teen years, by then there needs to be a shift, and this is my personal philosophy, toward beginning to really engage in dialogue and teaching and modeling critical thinking, so that it's not just, no, we don't do that, or no, we don't like that, but there's a deep understanding of the foundation of our values, of where they come from and why we hold the convictions we do, and how those convictions enable us to critique what we see in the culture, so that there can be a dialogue there, and so that our children, once they're out of the house, they have a foundation to grow in that skill as well, and they're not just left at the mercy of a culture that has very different ideas about what is true, what is right, and what is good.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch moving forward. I know when we were recently at Disney World, it was a place where primarily you would see the traditional nuclear family participating.
Right.
And so there is a pretty significant risk of alienating a lot of money if they end up this
yeah.
direction. It's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yep, I think it will be interesting to watch. And I think, you know, again, it all comes down to the bottom line. Everybody's risk averse while they're being as creative as they possibly can. And so I think there is this attempt to try to satisfy both sides, and you know, we see, I think, both sides at times saying, no, you didn't quite get it there, and I don't want to participate or spend my time and money engaging in that, but I'm sure that these companies are still trying to figure out how best to have, you know, stories that appeal to both sides of that cultural divide.
Talking with Adam Holtz this morning as we look ahead to movie possibilities from 2018 into 2019. And Adam, I think is it April, May, something like that, when Infinity War Part 2 comes out to sort of wrap up this version of that franchise?
Yeah, it's Avengers Endgame. They just announced the title here about 10 days ago, and that comes out May 3rd.
May 3rd. And so this does wrap up sort of era one of this entire Marvel franchise. But there seems to be evidence that they're going to spin this into an entirely new cycle with some of the characters we've seen. And they take the place of the Captain Americas and the Iron Man and all of that. Is that kind of what we see moving forward?
Well, I think so. I mean, there's still billions of dollars on the table. And certainly that's what Marvel and DC have both had to do themselves over, you know, decades. I mean, if you think about it, Peter Parker's been around since the late 60s, but he hasn't aged much. So, you know, the owners of these popular franchises and characters are constantly having to figure out how do they reimagine their iconic heroes while at the same time staying true to what fans expect. And so, yeah, we're going to get another iteration, and it will probably launch into a whole new generation of heroes and villains and interlocking stories, because Disney and Marvel have really figured out how to do that, so I think we'll see more of that.
Well, and it sounds like we have another Spider-Man coming out, which, you know, you've talked to me in the past. You know, he's my favorite superhero of all time. I tried to build web shooters growing up, all that good stuff, Adam, and seems like he's going to reemerge on the scene again this year.
he is going to reemerge on the scene, and you know, I think that he'll probably keep reemerging if recent history is any indication.
Well, and I know you do so much movie review just from a critical standpoint and having to track all the dialogue and pages and pages and pages of notes. But as we wrap up this time, Adam, is there one movie that you think about just from a personal standpoint? That's the one that I really can't wait for.
Well, I'm a Star Wars fanboy at heart, so I am hoping that Episode 9 rights the wrongs of of The Last Jedi, which I didn't really care for at all. So J.J. Abrams is back in charge, and I hope that he can bring a beloved and influential storyline to a conclusion that doesn't leave me walking out of the theater frustrated.
Yeah, certainly. I don't think even Mark Hamill was in favor of the way his character got developed in Episode 8 there. So hopefully it'll be interesting to see what they do from a CGI standpoint, if at all, with Princess Leia as well, right?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting because apparently there's some leftover footage that Carrie Fisher had shot before she tragically passed away. So I think it's going to be a poignant film. I think that it's going to be the end of an era again. Only this time, I think it really will be the end of an era, even as Disney looks for new ways to try to mine the Star Wars universe in other narrative corners of the galaxy.
Well, it sure is going to be fun to watch. And thanks again for joining us the way you have in 2018. I love our Friday morning time together. I know our family loves to listen and just catch up on what's all happening with music and news and with movies and all of that. So looking forward to a great 2019, Adam.
I am looking forward to that as well. We'll look forward to talking to you each week, Peter.
Sounds great. Well, more to come here on our New Year's Day show on Faith Radio Mornings. Sure enjoy chatting with Adam Holtz like that here each Friday morning on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take a break for some news, and then we'll be joined in the second half of this New Year's Day show by a good friend, Carmen LaBurge, who hosts Connecting Faith here on the Faith Radio Network. And Carmen also joins me every Friday to talk about so many news items. So we got together and taped a segment about looking ahead towards some of the key items from a Christian perspective, religious perspective, and what's going to impact the church most specifically in 2019. So more to come on Faith Radio Mornings with Carmen LaBurge next. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings on this New Year's Day, in which we're talking about some of the things we can anticipate in the new year ahead in 2019. We certainly don't have crystal balls for this, but in looking at some of the trends and where we've been in the past, we can at least think about some of those things that will be part of the conversation moving forward in 2019. And of course, who better to help me do that this morning than Carmen LaBurge, who is the host of Connecting Faith and does such great work thinking about what's going on in our world and in our families and our jobs and any number of the headlines and topics of the day and connecting them to our daily journey following Jesus. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning, Peter. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Great to have you as part of the show here. There are certain things that you do as part of New Year's Eve to celebrate as you get ready for the new year like this?
I don't stay up till midnight. I can just go ahead and confess that. I try to go to bed. It's pretty much my normal time. New Year's Eve is an opportunity, actually the last few days leading up to today. Jim and I have spent some intentional time reflecting on the year, which is now past. We do, we have a rhythm. We've been doing this, for 7 or 8 years now. We try to actually sort of assess, how did last year go in terms of us living it as a year unto the Lord? And so that's one of our sort of end of the year practices before we commit ourselves to really seeking to live 2019, in this case, as a year of the Lord. Like, what is that going to look like? And that's intentional for us. And so part of that is reviewing the calendar from the past year. I will tell you that I did not tend to Sabbath rest like I committed to at the beginning of the year. There were some things that I committed to at the beginning of last year that I kind of always commit to at the beginning of a year that still remain undone at the first of this new year. But we also look back at sort of our quarterly check in on this same subject. We do this little thing called God's ROI, God's return on investment, recognizing that he has poured into our lives his Holy Spirit, and he expects some return on that, some, you know, some fruit production. So at the end of the year, we kind of look back at those quarterly movements in our lives and see how we did. And so that is really our New Year's Eve practice in anticipation of today, doing the same thing with our calendars and our checkbooks, looking forward to 2019.
I love that, Carmen. There's such a sense if we can look back and remember where we've been, it helps really define and give us some shape of what we can anticipate moving forward. And of course, as you and I have been chatting off the air about some of these things, and we talk so often about challenges that Christians are facing in our culture and the country in which we live, and it's a beautiful country of freedom, but it also doesn't mean that it's exempt from difficulty. And 2018, Carmen, really represented one of the significant difficulties within both the Catholic and the Protestant Church. We saw a lot of sexual indiscretion here with the abuse of children in the Catholic Church, and of course the fall of Willow Creek, and in so many ways as being a very influential Protestant church, where we saw some of the difficult things happening behind the scenes with Pastor Bill Hybels. And you referenced the idea that there's a loss of credibility that obviously is part of the deal when those things happen. What are some things maybe the church can do in 2019 to begin to regain or establish a new level of credibility?
So I think the challenges that that we face in the church related to sexual purity, which is the way I would define what you're referring to, I think that part of that is simply a recognition that we don't understand who we are. We don't understand who we are in relationship to God, and therefore we don't understand who we are in relationship to one another. And so no wonder that the culture is in a sexual identity crisis, and so no wonder that that is a challenge that the church is going to face in the year ahead in terms of speaking into the culture's gender and sexual identity crisis, because we in the church have not rightly proclaimed nor positively lived out what it means to be men and women in right relationship to God and therefore in right relationship with one another. And so I would encourage folks to genuinely focus energy and attention on what does it mean to be a credible witness in terms of the sanctity of marriage. If we could begin reclaiming sanctity of marriage language, if we could begin reclaiming the sanctified marriage bed, then Peter, we wouldn't even have the flirtations with sexual impropriety or sexual abuse that we are now talking about in the culture writ large. We have a lot of work to do in the church in the areas of forgiveness. We have a lot of genuinely wounded people. We have a lot of kids who have been genuinely hurt by the failure of adults who have held themselves out as Christians, but who have certainly not behaved in ways that are like Christ. And so I think that when we talk about regaining our credibility, I would say that's the, it may even be establishing credibility. Mm. There may be for an entire generation, no credibility in the church to be regained. This may be something that simply needs to be established, which means we've got to lay cornerstones and we've got to painstakingly lay brick in order that we might walk by faith in a demonstration of the gospel to others.
Well, it certainly sounds like that one thing we could do in light of all of this is, yes, we need to focus on the disorder and the brokenness that's taking shape. But if we could articulately and very thoughtfully reconstruct what is the beautiful and wonderful invitation towards the male and female covenant of marriage, that then it begins to shine a light on all of these deviations in a different kind of way. If we can see the invitation towards the good towards which we're called.
Yeah, absolutely. That expulsive power of a new affection, right? If we could fall in love with Christ in such a way that becomes our first affection, not just in terms of our relationship with God, but that becomes our first affection in terms of our relationships with one another. If I first see you as a person for whom Christ came, for whom Christ died, on whom Christ has set his eternal affection. If I remember that when Jesus is praying in John 17, not just for the disciples who are there at the time, but for every person who will ever come to faith in him, if I recognize that means Jesus is thinking about Peter Kapsner, not just Peter, you know, standing there next to him, but Peter Kapsner, then maybe I am going to treat you differently. Mm. Maybe I am going to acknowledge your eternal nature. Maybe I am going to recognize in you first, a brother with whom I am going to spend all eternity. So I may treat you differently in the moment that we have together in whatever encounter we have here on the earth, if I am genuinely keeping in mind that you are a person for whom Christ came, for whom Christ died, and on whom Christ has set his eternal affection.
Carmen, I think that's such great advice. I think about those times in my life when I was truly embarrassed by my lack of compassion for other people, that maybe I would give out of a sense of duty or be kind through gritted teeth, and just asking God to allow me to see them the way that God would see them, because then at that point, maybe my heart would actually move towards in places of empathy and compassion for other people.
Yeah, now you're speaking, specifically to, I think, one of the challenges that I face, and that is that I don't have a sense that I have enough time to do what's in front of me to do. And that's an idol that I have got to address and I've got to tear down in my own life, in order that, I can recognize, look, God is God. He is sovereign. He's providential. He's the one who has set the divine appointments for the day. I am simply responsible to keep them. And part of keeping them means recognizing that God is the God of my time.
Yeah, I share that very same struggle, Carmen. And I think many of us that are listening this morning can enter into that reality and the invitation to really see each other as God might see us, and what can happen from there. So it's New Year's Day. We're chatting with Carmen LaBurge here about what we can anticipate potentially in the year ahead for the church, some of the challenges, some of the opportunities that are in front of us as we keep following out this journey of faith. We'll take a short break and come back with more with Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on New Year's Day. We've been chatting with Carmen LaBurge about what we can anticipate as the church potentially moving forward into 2019. And Carmen, our time is short, so I'm just going to give you a bullet list, a quick phrase, and you can just riff on that. Let's start first with fresh understanding of what it means to be ecumenical.
So I think that one of the great hopes I have for the church in North America in 2019 is that we will begin moving in a direction of understanding that we are all brothers and sisters in Christ, regardless of the particular variety of denomination or non-denomination that our church is a part of. So I'm looking forward to that. I see evidences of new groupings of formerly sort of disconnected Christian bodies coming together. And so that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. And each and every person can participate in that by, reaching out to Christian brothers and sisters beyond their own local congregation.
All right. So fresh understanding of the role of people of faith in the political and social conversations of the day.
So I think this one, Peter, looks back to the reality that part of our loss of credibility as Christians has been the confusion bred in the political arena related to who are Christians, how are Christians voting, how are Christians speaking to the issues of the day. So one of the great hopes I have for this coming year is that we will cultivate publicly a fresh understanding of the role of Christians specifically in the political and social conversations of the day. That is going to happen not only by people who are in positions of leadership. I'm going to take here like Steve Scalise. I don't know if folks are familiar with, he's the majority whip or has been up to this point. I mean, obviously, when Congress comes back into session, the Republicans will be in the minority. But, Steve is was the majority whip when he was shot on the baseball field at the practice, for the game that was going to be between the Republicans and the Democrats. Well, he's written a book in which he really gives this very fresh expression of his faith. And so I guess I'm hoping that people like Steve Scalise and others at the highest levels will give us good people to point to, and that we in our own public speech, particularly on social media, that we as Christians will recognize the responsibility that we have as people of faith in those conversations to bear witness to Jesus Christ and the mind of Christ on the matters of the day, not just not just whatever's on our own mind.
I love it. So how about fresh understanding of what it means to be evangelical and church planting, even related to that?
So I think that the word evangelical or evangelical has been really misunderstood in at least the past year, but probably going back a couple of years now. People now associate the word evangelical with something largely political. Most evangelicals that I know, they don't mean anything about politics at all when they use the term to self-describe. They're talking there about a theological commitment to the gospel of Jesus Christ and to the sharing of that gospel as the good news, for all people. And so when we look at the word evangelical in the culture today, I'm hoping that 2019 provides an opportunity for folks who really are evangelical at the heart of things, but who have resisted being described as evangelical in public because of all of the nasty stuff that's been attached to that word. I'm hoping that that group of people emerges to basically say, you know what, I'm evangelical and this is what it means. And so to reclaim not only the language, but reclaim the witness. And part of that, Peter, I think is going to happen through church planting. I see church planting efforts by a myriad of denominations and groups in the United States. I think people are going to be surprised by the number of new churches that pop up in the next year.
So how about taking the lead on a really important subject of reconciliation, both across maybe the political spectrum as well as the racial spectrum?
Yeah, I think that racial reconciliation is a clear area where Christians can take the lead in the culture. We, better than anybody else, we actually understand the basis of why people of every ethnicity and every color should be treated equally, with the equal dignity of their humanity, because they're all image bearers of the living God. And so this gives us the opportunity. The racial strife in our country actually gives us the opportunity as Christians to make a very positive witness about diversity. We can point to creation. We can point to the genealogy of Jesus. We can point to the cross, and we can certainly point to the descriptions of the kingdom of heaven in the book of Revelation. And we can say, look, it's people of every tribe and tongue. Even from God's first conversation with Abraham and the making of the Abrahamic covenant, you know, God is a God who really is in this for all people of all places. He really does want his people to be a conduit of his blessing to everyone. We look at the genealogy of Jesus, and it is Jewish for the most part, but there are some very non-Jewish characters in Jesus's genealogy. And we got to talk about, like, okay, we're talking about the Jewish Messiah, but we're really talking about the Messiah for everyone. At the cross, we all stand on equal footing as people in need of a Savior. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. It doesn't matter how old you are. You stand at the foot of the cross in need of a Savior. And Jesus Christ serves as the Savior once and for all. And then certainly in the kingdom of heaven, where there is representation of people of every tribe and tongue, from east, west, north, and south. They're going to come and they're going to sit at table together in the kingdom of heaven. There's no reason, Peter, that we can't start manifesting that right here, right now, in the context of the United States, as Christians who are saying, look, it's time. It's time for us to be bearing positive public witness here and now as a living demonstration of the gospel to show people what the kingdom of God is really going to be like in terms of racial diversity.
It's New Year's Day, and we're chatting with Carmen LeBurge, the host of Connecting Faith, here as part of the Faith Radio Network, and giving Carmen a list of bullet point thoughts that she can riff on a bit this morning as we anticipate the new year ahead and some of the challenges that we need to think about and talk about as a church. And Carmen, I have a lot of friends in the Roman Catholic Church. I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church and have a deep appreciation for so much of the history and the theological views and the depth and richness there. So if I said the phrase new reformation within the Roman Catholic Church, how would you respond to that?
Let it be. I am very hopeful that one of the things that we're going to see in Roman Catholicism over the next year is a deepening of the conversations that have already started there about lay leadership, the recognition among Protestants, we would call it, maybe a growing recognition that there is a priesthood of all believers. They're never going to get to that language. But I do believe that because of the need for accountability and because of simply the cultural change that is pushing them globally, I do believe that we're going to see lay people recognized as essential to the positive leading and organization of the Roman Catholic Church going forward. I am hopeful That there will be genuine repentance in relationship to the sexual sin rampant in Roman Catholicism. And again, that's not to say that we as Protestants are immune from that. We have our own issues and our own problems related to Me Too, Church Too, but we do not have the predator priest issue that they have in Roman Catholicism. And so even just looking forward to February, when Roman Catholics from around the world are going to gather and deal with that issue, I have high hopes that this is not just going to be a one issue oriented conversation, but a genuine beginning of a new reformation in Roman Catholicism.
That's great material. Great stuff this morning, Carmen. I really appreciate you joining us on New Year's Day like this. And why don't you text me later your New Year's resolutions? We'll read them on air, and then we'll hold you accountable for the entire year of 2019.
Yeah, I'm busy the rest of the day. Thanks, man.
Happy New Year's, Carmen. We'll talk to you soon.
Happy New Year.
More to come here on Faith Radio Mornings for this New Year's Day. Boy, it's always great to have somebody like Carmen LaBerge that I can ask just about anything to, and she just has history and experience and such knowledge of so many of these topics, and then not only can think through them from a theological depth, but also think through it in terms of the impact that it has on us in daily life. And the church is always having to navigate so many different conversations in our culture, many of which are unanticipated. And as we look forward to 2019 together, I think a lot of these topics are going to continue to stay in the news, continue to impact our lives, certainly as believers. So very appreciative of Carmen LaBerge for joining us and talking through some of what we can expect in 2019. Coming up next in hour two, we'll be joined by favorite guest Adam Carrington, and we'll talk about what we can expect from the Supreme Court in 2019.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.